Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Outer Sanctum is recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respect to their elders past and present.
Good plan. Who thought of this one?
You're listening to the Outer Sanctum podcast.
Here is a moment in time in the history of the AFL.
In from the side, Houghton. She was surrounded by blue jumpers.
Groundbreakers, history makers.
Welcome to the Outer Sanctum for another episode of The Fifth Quarter. I am your host, Kate Sear, and this week I am joined by the newly crowned Melburnian of the Year. She is, of course, Peggy O'Neill AO. She's the president of the Richmond Football Club. She's just been announced as the next Chancellor of RMIT University, but most of all, she's a dear friend of the pod. Peggy, welcome to the Outer Sanctum.
Thank you, Kate. It's good to be with you again.
Yeah, it's been such a long time since we've had you on, and even longer since I've seen you. How have you been the last 2 years?
Oh, it has been 2 years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I've been fine. I've been sort of just taking each day as it comes, like most of the rest of Victoria. Along the way, though, I had a highlight. My wonderful team won the 2020 Premiership, so that was a big bit of excitement in a pretty bleak landscape by the time we got to October 2020. But I can't overlook that. It was a really bright spot and for me and for a lot of other people. I didn't get to go to the grand final, but I watched it. And you might recall that Amazon was doing a film about following us for the season. I was filmed watching the grand final. All I kept thinking was, I hope we don't lose. It's bad enough to lose under any circumstances, but to be filmed when that happens could have been a really disappointing display on my part. But that didn't occur. So I've been fine. I've been healthy. I've had tons of work to do. I've been one of the fortunate people was able to get on with most of their life, minus football and minus seeing friends and things like you.
Yes, and huge congratulations on that flag, Peggy. Richmond have just been amazing under your leadership, and it's really been an incredible era for Tigers fans. Looking back over the last couple of years, as you know, COVID has just wrought havoc on the sporting landscape. But I wonder if there are positives that have come out of COVID for footy.
My job, while all of us sort of had to scramble, we have such a great management team with Brendan Gale and his exec that I must say the heavy lifting was done by those who have the day-to-day responsibility. We found that a lot of things we always did or they were traditional to do, or we couldn't possibly play games any unless we had our 6 or 7 day break, and we couldn't travel and play. And so from a football scheduling standpoint, I think we found out that you didn't really need those kinds of always has to be. And so I think that's one of the positives is if there's a will, there's a way. And if we have to, and the work that people did to keep the season alive. and I don't mean to be facetious about this, but I think if there was a lot of hygiene things that came out of it, and that now it's you don't have to apologize if you want to wash your hands all the time, or if you want to keep your distance, or if you think wearing a mask is a pretty good idea. I think that a lot of times is in sporting clubs, you would say, oh, this somebody has gastro, it's going to, you know, we have to isolate them. I think, well, if we washed our hands more often, if we did these things, we probably wouldn't have to worry about those minor, what were relatively minor illnesses. So I know once in the competition committee, someone said, is there anything that we need to keep? And I said, hygiene. We need people to be cleaner.
You mentioned Brendan Gale there, who's obviously been an incredible asset to the Tigers. And in the last few days, we've seen that he's been reappointed. Uh-huh. So if I have my, if I've calculated things correctly, you'll finish up as president in the next couple of years, Peggy. And
I got one more season. This time next year, I'll be finished. Yeah.
Tell our listeners, particularly our Tigers fans, how you feel about the prospects of the Tigers, both the men's and the women's team, which we must not forget, of course, mm-hmm. over the next few years.
Maybe first I'll just talk a bit about the leadership of the club and the succession, because there were a number of us who sort of came together at the same time. You know, Brendan and Damien Hardwick were hired in the same month. And Damien's contract's been extended. Trent Cotchin became captain about the same time. And as we know, Trent has stepped down as captain. Right now, they're going through the process with the men's team about identifying the next captain, which probably won't be announced till late February or March. And then Brendan, who often is, people keep telling me that he's leaving, and I keep thinking, I don't think so. We've worked together a long time. I think I would know. Is his contract finished just in October? And we had had conversations through the year, and he was very keen to stay on. And we had a board committee that worked through detail, and then he and I finalized it. And so that's all in place. But I agree, you need change, but you also need sort of more controlled change, especially in that area where there's a lot of just corporate history and there's a lot of club history. And right now we have a couple of a really big project, probably the biggest project in, I guess, the last 30 or 40 years of the club, which is the redevelopment of Punt Road Oval, which is moving along at a pretty good rate. But I think Brendan sees that as a legacy project and wants to be involved to see that through. So I do think that continuity of some of the leadership, with new leadership coming in and the board starting to work through what we're going to talk about at the board meeting tomorrow, and then we'll probably get sort of down into exactly what we're going to do to replace me. And that person will come from the current board, and we have some great directors, so I don't think there's any worry there. But what do I think about the future? I think it looks bright for the women and the men. I think our women's team's really going to take a big step this year. And we announced our leadership group for the women, and Katie Brennan's going to be our captain again. Sarah Hosking and then Harriet Cordner's come in, and it's wonderful to have Harriet with us. And who knew she was going to be so good in the back line, but she is. So we made a few steps. This is our third season. And last year we, you know, won our first game, and then we won a couple more games after that. And so I've heard from all three of them, and they're all very excited and think there's something good that's going to happen this year. And Monique Conti is going to have a full preseason. So you can tell I'm excited about it. I can't wait for them to play. I was like everybody, probably a bit disappointed, but understood why things were postponed till January, thinking give us every chance that the fixture we could play in all the states. And but I don't know that that's going to happen this time. The men, everybody always asks me, so I'll start with that. Dustin's in training. It was a terrible injury, and he was very, very ill. But he's quite excited. I've heard from a couple of the players. Since I've won this award, they've sent me messages, and they're excited about 2022 as well. So I think there's plenty to be optimistic about. And what I'm most optimistic about is that we can buy tickets and maybe go to games.
Wouldn't that be a novelty?
It would be. And I think that's sort of it's fun to watch your team win on television when you're winning. But it's really fun to be with a crowd of like-minded spectators and get to sing the song or get to commiserate.
I want to ask you a bit about this award you've won. Congratulations again on being awarded the Melburnian of the Year. Now, you were acknowledged for a few things, and I want to start, first of all, with your role promoting women in leadership. Is this something that you were passionate about in the past, or did you sort of fall into the role that many of us know you play as a mentor to other women and a real role model for women leaders?
I guess I've always thought that there was no reason why women couldn't do things. It sounds pretty primitive to even say it that way, because of course that's the case. But But the more that I even now find people saying, well, you're the first, or you're the first this or that. And I think I'm really pretty tired of that. And somebody has to be the first. And if it's me, I'm really happy. But I would have hoped that by now we would have lots of people that would have crossed that threshold and been first well before we get to 2022 and we're still having women do things for the first time. But women in leadership, I guess it was how much I like equality, equality for women, equality for everybody who wants to participate and contribute, and why should they be stopped because of these characteristics that you're born with. So I guess in a way it goes back to a bit of social justice for me. And it was Hillary Clinton said that, you know, women's rights are human rights. And I think that's for everybody. It's for everybody is the ability to think I have some skills and I want to help. And there ought to be a way for me to do that. So sometimes you are aware that you're the only one, that a lot of women's opportunities in the future might be influenced by how people around that table or in that commercial business, how they regard you, as unfair as that might be. So I think early on, I was particularly aware of how you behave and perhaps wanting to be acceptable to everyone, because if you weren't, it wasn't just about you, it was about a population that suddenly you represented. And I would expect that many listeners have heard, oh, well, we'll get a woman on the board and she can tell us about retail, she could tell us about. And it's like, no, the variety of women are as great as the variety of men or anything. But somehow it was a very narrow perception of what women would bring. And I think over time that's starting to fall by the wayside. But I'm sure somewhere out there it's still alive. And I just haven't, it hasn't been something that's crossed my path yet. But fortunately, most of the causes or organizations that I've wanted to be involved with have been very much fling open the doors and anybody who wants to help can come through. But I think that getting women into leadership roles is a good first step. And I think women in leadership roles more often than not, in my experience, help people of all kinds come through after that. And someone had said to me, oh, but the women part is the easy part to solve. And I said, well, let's solve that first then, if that's the easy part. And the other things will just come along even more rapidly, because I think that women do appreciate that if they're given an opportunity, they want to create opportunities for others.
We now have two others. And of course, they were the presidents of the clubs that competed in the men's grand final this year. What did it mean to you personally to see two other women take up those roles and to see their teams make the grand final?
I was thrilled, because I've known Kate and Kylie for a while. The women on AFL club boards until COVID would get together a couple times a year for dinner. And so Kate and Kylie have both been on their respective boards for a while. So I'd gotten to know them. And there's so many wonderful women who serve on AFL boards across, not to say that men aren't the wonderful, but it's just incredible to see the group of women and on the AFL commission. So in fact, the three of us had dinner back in July, and one of those little periods of, we can go in and sit down and have a pizza, which is what we did. At that time, they didn't know they were going to be in a grand final, and I was still hoping that we would, you know, we'd be in the eight. And we just had a delightful time. And I've said before, I don't really like seeing their teams win, but I was so happy for the two of them. The two of them went to Perth and they sent me a picture of the two of them together in the stands.
Oh, great.
And I thought, oh, you were so thoughtful to think about sending that picture to me. And I thought, well, when the game starts, you won't be sitting together. I can tell you that.
Now, we know selfies being taken together after the first bout.
I was thrilled for them. And if I wasn't there, but I couldn't pick a team.
Because that I was going to be my team. Next question, please.
I don't want any team but mine to win. I know that's impossible, but I want every team to lose. So I'll just leave it at that.
You're a woman after my own heart. I feel the same about Hawthorn.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Ali Blackburn, and you're listening to The Outer Sanctum.
Coming back to this award of Melbournian of the Year, as I said, you were mentioned for your role promoting women in leadership. One thing that I know you were also recognised for was your work to provide stable housing for women and children. And I do know that there was some research out earlier this year that suggested that more than 9,000 women and children face homelessness each year after leaving a violent partner. Can you tell us a little bit about your involvement in this work and why and how you got involved?
Thanks. There are a couple of organizations I'm involved. One is Women's Housing. That's a housing association here in Victoria. And their offices are in Cremorne, near my head, and 10-minute walk away. But I was asked by a former colleague who came in to chair that, asked me if I would be interested in helping, that they were sort of reformulating the board, and he was looking for a mix of skills. And so I said, well, I'll give it a year. You know, I'll come and help you get through this and if I can do anything. And then I just loved what they did after I found more out about what they did. And one of the things was, it's not just, there's women in domestic violence, which is horrible enough, but, you know, women coming out of prison, women who are just destitute for all sorts of reasons. And one of the big concerns is older women who become homeless, and they're the fastest growing segment of poverty. And, you know, whether they've been widowed or divorced or can't get back into the workforce, we need to address that in some way. The idea of being able to buy a house or even rent a place. So now Women's Housing have been successful for the last 2 or 3 years in getting some startup money from the government and part of Minister Wynne's big build. We're building quite a few out in Western Victoria because the regions need support as well. And so we're building new housing and units. And the demand is so high that you can never quite match it, but you got to start somewhere. And so it's just really rewarding. It's really important. The other organization that I'm just on their investment advisory committee, but we all know about the big issue, but they have a sort of subsidiary business called Homes for Homes. They raise money through this innovative sort of mechanism. And we give grants to organizations like Women's Housing and others, the ones who actually build. But we amass some funds and then have granting rounds in the ACT and then Victoria is where we're starting mostly. But again, it just goes back to alleviating poverty. The number one thing is to find a place to live.
It's shameful, really, in such a wealthy country, isn't it, Peggy, that we have this great need for women of all ages and backgrounds. But I'm personally really touched that you're doing that work. I want to just come back to talking a little bit about women in leadership. In my work and I think in other fields that you've been involved in, like in the law, I often see a lot of emphasis on the need for women to do extra training so that they develop a skill set and the kind of necessary qualifications, more courses, more short courses, more workshops and so on, so that they can build up to a point where they might be suitable for leadership roles. And what I want to ask you is, do you think that men and the systems that have often been designed by men also need to change? And do you see those changes happening and the emphasis being placed not on women but on men and on systems?
You're right. It's kind of curious that most of the training needs to be done by one gender and not the other. But I also think that it goes back to deciding what you want your leader to be. Do you want your leader to be what has always been? And like the law is what I have the experience in. Do you want it always to be the partner who works in mergers and acquisitions and brings in the most money, and they somehow end up in management and running the firm, or and it requires a bit of reflection and a bit of change of a lot of change of direction, I suppose. But I sometimes, you know, when you hear, oh, well, women need to be more confident, and I always think, well, says who? Is that what you want? Is and what's confidence? Just because is confidence talking about yourself a lot? Is confidence drawing attention to your accomplishments? Is confidence just knowing that you do a good job and you're secure in yourself and you don't have to, I can do the job and get on with it. So and lots of times I think women don't have time to go around talking about how good they are at stuff because they're good at so many things. They have to get on with it. And I don't want it to be so black and white that way. But my experience was that there was a vision people had about what the leader should look like. And that vision didn't change, including that it was generally white men. I've spoken at a couple of legal firms in recent years, and you know, a lot of them want to hear about premierships and those sorts of things. But I was really surprised at one of the last ones I did. And they said, and one of the people in the audience, a guy said, well, I think we could learn a lot about straight talking, about telling people what they do wrong. And I said, whoa, sport doesn't talk like that anymore. You talk about your strengths, you help people, you don't humiliate people. That's old if that's the way that you think you get the best out of your workforce. And so I think there's still this hangover about being tough and about some people can cut it and some can't. And the ones who have made it, surprisingly, all look like the last person who made it. So it takes a bit to be brave enough to break out of that mold. And I see quite a bit of it happening now, or maybe it's promoted more. I think a lot of people benefit from having someone help them identify things they want to work on, as opposed to being told, we want you to do this because you don't do it the way I do it. I would hope that most of those days are past. I suspect they're not all, but I agree with you that it's got to be a bit more driven by the person and what they think they need rather than saying, you know, you lack this, this, and this. And
Peggy, I wonder if there are any lessons from the corporate sector and from your experience for AFL football. And I'm thinking in particular while I'm listening to you talk about the fact that we have lost women coaches from the AFLW, that we currently have all men. We will have a woman come in 12 months or so. But is that phenomenon about the fact that clubs can't conceptualize anything other than men coaching in those roles, the kind of model that they've seen in the past? And how do we fix that, if so?
Oh, I don't know how we fix it. It's easy to identify a problem. I think a couple of things. There's no science. I have no analysis or data that I can rely on. This is more just an impression that once things become paid jobs, is usually the men get them or they become interested. And when you start saying, well, who has experience to start my fledgling team, because we're all fledgling teams, is you say, well, there's someone who's had success coaching their own team. They're just, and you can't really deny that. But I think at the same time, how do you fix it is you have, I say, well, is when there's as many women coaching men as men coaching women, we will have fixed it. When it's opening, not just for women to coach women, but for women to coach men. And you know, maybe that's just a pie in the sky sort of thing, but you know, why not? In America, there are women who are starting to break through in the professional ranks where there are, you know, thousands of people who want those jobs and they're being identified as the ones who can do it. I think also that we do get used to a certain image of what a coach is like and that would have to change. But in fixing it, I think that there needs to be a requirement that you bring along and give experience to women who want coaching as a profession, and that's part of the licensing requirements for women's sport of all kinds. It's just making sure that when you say you have to have experience for the job, that we give people a chance to get that experience. And then when they go and apply, like assistant coaches who move on to senior coaches in the men's game, is, well, I coached my own team, or I was assistant coach at the premiership team, and then suddenly you got a credential and then you can move in. And there's a lot of prep work that needs to go into understanding the game. At, you know, AFLW is pretty new, and it is a high performance elite competition, and just understanding what's expected, especially as the competition grows, which I can't wait for every club to have a team, is it's a pretty demanding role. And I'd like to see that pay goes up for the coaches there as well. But I think we need to require that every club has a woman who's also assistant coach and gains that experience. So then the competition and the pool of people for those jobs gets bigger.
Yeah, that would be terrific. My final question for you, Peggy, is we talked earlier about the fact that you've got about a year left in your presidency at Richmond. Mm-hmm. Do you imagine staying involved in the sport in any way, or you're obviously going on to become the Chancellor at RMIT University? Do you see your time within sport coming to a kind of natural close?
I do. It's the AGM in 2022, so there'll be December, so 13 months left. Many games to go to as president between now and then. This is my farewell tour starting out. I think that it's time for other people to have fun and get to do this labor of love that's, you know, rewarded me so much. You never know what's going to happen, and you hope that you're there to experience a premiership. I always thought I would never make it to the ground, that I would just have a heart attack on the way. But when it's there, you just enjoy the whole thing. So I will have given 17 years on the board to Richmond by then, and 9 years of those as president. So I think that my time is done, and I'll be a great spectator, and I will get to sit there with my beanie on now and yell and scream and don't have to worry about the camera coming and finding me in the stands because I try to stay cool, but underneath I'm always just like this. So I think it's time to figure out the next decade and what that might be. But I think that sport, as much as it's given to me, I just am going to relax into just enjoying it after that and watch it with a keen eye.
Well, we'll definitely have you back on the Outer Sanctum before you hang up the boots, Peggy, and after you hang up the boots, I hope to. Congratulations again on being announced as the Melburnian of the Year and the RMIT University Chancellor. And thanks so much, as always, for coming and joining us on the Outer Sanctum.
Well, you're more than welcome. It's good to see you even on a screen.
Likewise. Thanks, Peggy.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.